and welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club of sorts for geek culture. Kind of like, actually more of a common media program. It's lots of things. Each episode, we select a topic that four people will discuss from their own geeky, nerdy perspectives.
Ooh.
Joining me this episode are...
Hi, my name is Jeff. This time around, I think I'm going to be repping a game called Avalon. It's a board game.
Hi, I'm Taimul, or Shouter, whichever you prefer. And I'll be repping a game that I despise, Monopoly.
Monopoly's great. You're a hater.
Monopoly sucks, man.
Hey, it's me, Keaton. I will be repping a game called Betrayal at House on the Hill. It is also a board game.
Such a good game.
We're all pretty bored.
Oh, God.
Bored of games.
But I'm tush.
It's almost like the topic is going to be something similar to that.
Weird.
And I, Austin, am your host. For this episode's topic, I have selected Magic the Gathering, specifically the Commander format of Magic the Gathering.
It's pronounced suspifically.
Right. And the theme here being politics in multiplayer games. Really, like, multi here contextually meaning more than two. But, you know, it's fine.
There technically are the same politics in two-player games. It's just you don't really have to deliberate because you only have one option of who to target down.
Who do you think I should target? The only other guy?
Yeah, it's just like war. Or, like, more-player games are just politics where it's war by another means.
Are you suggesting that there isn't any politics involved in war?
No, I'm saying that war is just very blunt politics.
Yes. Yeah. You're right.
You know, less blunt than you would think.
Sometimes literally blunt, like with a hammer.
Okay, anyway, we should probably get into a summary. Yeah, so for any of you who didn't know what those words that came out of my mouth a couple seconds ago mean, Magic the Gathering is a trading card game that was created by Wizards. Well, it was created by a dude, but Wizards of the Coast published it starting in 1933, so it's just a little bit older than
it's
we are.
It's that old?
Crazy. Yeah, no, it's...
Yeah, it's ancient.
It's the grandmother of all your... This is your dad's card game.
Wait, hold the fuck up. Did you just say published in 1933 is just a little bit older than we are?
Oh, no, no, sorry. I totally meant to say 1993.
Oh, that's very different.
There we go. That makes sense.
I don't know
sense.
What the fuck came out of my mouth.
I was just like, really? I didn't know it was made in 33. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Lord of the Rings kind of old if it was 1933.
And then I was questioning why Austin thought that made in 1933 was just a little bit older than we were.
Well, I mean,
It's not older than Laura.
Anywho, that is Laura immortal?
Of course, didn't you know?
No, she was okay. Just born before 1993.
Oh, I thought you were still going off at 33. It's fine, we're good. Anywho, so
yeah, Laura's like 80.
Yeah, but anyway, more actual details about the game is that for anyone, of course, who doesn't know, Magic is a game where you put together. Normally, you put together a 60-card deck and you play against another person, simulating a battle between very powerful magicians using different kinds of spells and summoning creatures and beating each other up until one of you is dead.
That was a really logical way to describe that.
What?
That description made a lot of sense. I don't know if I would have been able to come up with that.
Oh, thank you.
You came up with, like, the plot of the game, and I just would have been like, okay, so you have these things, right? And then you do these things, and then, you know, you'll see when I get to Avalon.
Yeah, it's way easier to try to explain the abstract concept of the game than to, like, tell you how to play it in a podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be fucked
that
up.
That makes a lot of sense.
But anyway, we were playing a very special version of the game called Commander. It's actually a fan-created format, well, a format where players construct 100-card decks as opposed to 60-card decks, with each card except basic lands appearing no more than once. Players also choose a legendary creature or planeswalker card to be their commander. So it's like they have a card that's a certain character that they have as their commander, and, like, they choose cards to build around that character, and it's a funny game for Magic because you can play it with more than two players. In fact, most often you play it with like 3 to 6 people. And
so you choose who you attack now instead of...
Yeah, you don't have just one opponent. You have to choose who's the most threatening to you or like who you dislike. You can have any number of reasons for attacking someone.
Thus, shit gets political.
Yes. It gets crazy. So to do some of that politics and some of that game, I slapped together some commander decks, which were not completely optimal, honestly, for some cases. But then the four of us played a game of Commander the other day.
Yep.
And I won.
Yeah, Jeff, I think Jeff had the best deck generally, though.
Which is why I think that I should automatically have won the Gold Star Student Award. We don't even have to do the rest of the podcast.
That was pretty close, though, so don't pretend like, you know, it was an easy victory.
Yeah, but you were pretty close, and I won.
I mean, the only one who wasn't close was Taimul, because if Jeff had done things differently on his last turn, he would have killed you, and then I would have turned all of his dragons into frogs and killed them.
Well, I would have killed them.
No. If he attacked you first, I would have waited for him to kill you, my dude.
To be fair, I was this close to just flooding everything with snakes.
See, you all say that you were this close to winning, this close to turning everything into frogs, this close to turning things into snakes.
Well,
you know
Tamil
how close I was
that.
To winning? Literally did it. Boom. Argument.
Jeffrey, just checkmate. Remember, though, that your victory was decided by Austin. So, Mr. Politic in that. Because Austin, viewers, had an opportunity where basically he knew he couldn't win, but he could decide who loses. And for some reason, he chose Jeffrey as a victor.
Yeah, see, there. That's the political aspect of it. I did something with my life that made Austin want me to win more than you. Therefore,
well,
I still get credit for that,
it was,
right?
Actually, it was because of the cards that Keenan had on the field. Even if I turned them into frogs, they would still be able to kill me. So, like, I thought Keenan was essentially more dangerous.
Yeah, there you go. See, I played it just safe enough to win. It was pure strategy. I definitely did not have a card that attacked
anyway,
a random person every turn.
That's the only reason I lost, because your dragon kept attacking me.
That dragon had sense, okay? The luck gods were in my favor.
Is there anything that you guys think that you found particularly striking about the game, or that you thought, if you've played Magic before, that was different about Commander compared to what you've done before, or, I don't know, just anything you want to add that's not, like, super relevant to your domain and stuff you were thinking about for discussion?
It was cool to build a deck around one card. I had played other card games before, like a trading card game, no collectible card games, and mostly that was like building a deck that had really good synergy with each other. It was kind of interesting to have things play off pretty much your main guy's ability.
Yeah. Just in the format of playing with four people versus two, I liked the politics that was added to it, because it gives you a bit more options in the ways that you win. Whereas I feel like in Magic in particular, when you're playing against only one person, you kind of get into positions where you're pretty much, like, all set or just fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not dependent on what the other person does, because once you've played the game enough, there are clear right and wrong ways to do things. Whereas when you're playing with more people, then it's a bit more, I don't want to say chance dependent, but you make gambles. Like, you're like, I should attack Jeffrey or I should attack Keenan because one of them is the bigger threat. You know what I mean? And you have to kind of make more decisions that way. Whereas in the base game, you don't really make as many decisions because, like, you have the cards that you can use. And at least the times that I've played, I run out of the things in my hand pretty quickly. So I just kind of play what I get, you know?
Yeah.
I liked it more because it gave me more choices, I guess, is the moral of the story.
I think it's kind of impressive how flexible the rules of Magic can be to, like, create something like Commander. Like, I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! And I've tried playing, like, 2v2s, and, like, it can be done in a way, but, like, it doesn't really work out, you know? There's a lot of house rules you have to set up, and it just doesn't work out. Yu-Gi-Oh! Mm-hmm. is just not flexible enough to have, like, different kinds of game modes, whereas Magic has things like Two-Headed Giant and Commander, which just kind of shows what a well-designed game Magic is, because rules are broad enough that you can use them in different ways instead of just...
You think they designed it to be purposefully flexible like that, though, or is that just an outcome?
I think it's just an outcome, but because it's the oldest, they've had a lot more time to develop it than other card games, and they put a lot more work into their game design, I think, than a lot of other games have.
Yeah, I feel it's an outcome, but it's like they actually thought about how the rules affect the game, and because those rules are so well designed, they unintentionally created more choices.
And it does seem like a bit more balanced than a lot of deck building games. Cough cough, Duelist.
I Well, no, because Jeffrey, you're looking at like two completely different games.
That's fair.
Commander is a casual format, but if you got a deck and just hopped into Modern or you hopped into even Standard, you would see like Duelist is not super broken for a card game. I just don't think that you have played a bunch of different card games.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I don't think you've recognized when things are actually like super unhealthy for the game and when things are just like, oh, that happens
cough,
sometimes
cough,
because
Yu-Gi-Oh.
Hey. Now that we've talked a little bit about Magic and
Magic.
A very tiny bit about the politics and stuff therein, then I guess, Jeff,
Ayo.
Tell us about your Avalon.
So Avalon, or if anyone is listening, it's a very similar game to The Resistance. So if you know that, it's basically the same game. But Avalon is a board game, and it centers around a lot of lying and deceit, because basically how it works is at the beginning of the game, anonymously, everyone is assigned a role of being either good or evil, and the evil people know who all the evil people are, and the good people don't know shit. The entire game is based around sending groups of two or three people on five missions and picking who gets to go on those missions. Once someone's in a mission, if they're evil, they have the option to just decide that it fails. And if three of the five missions fail, the evil team wins. And if three of the five missions succeed, the good team wins. So basically, everyone's trying to convince each other that they should be the one to go on because A, they're good and they want to feel secure about there being good people on the team.
Gotcha.
Or B, they're evil and they want to fail the mission.
Mm.
So it's kind of a politics of like, if you're evil when you're on a team, do you want to pass it to make yourself look good for later use? Or do you want to fail it because, you know, that's a third of your objective done at the risk of making yourself more suspicious? Because if you're on a team that fails, then people will be more suspicious of you and not want to put you on further missions. So it's a lot of like crazy mind games, because what you basically have to do, you know, like everyone is claiming that they're good, obviously.
Well, yeah.
They have no reason to claim that they're evil. So it's a lot of mind games of like going back and forth and following like logical ways of thinking to try to convince people that you can be trusted or that someone else can't be trusted.
A game of deception.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of nonsense there because, you know, if you're evil, you have to make up some of that stuff, right? You kind of have to come up with very convincing arguments for why you're good. Like, there's a first mission, it only has two people in it, so every time you're put on the first mission, almost everybody passes that mission, whether they're good or evil. So it really doesn't give a whole lot of information, but being on that first mission, you can say like, hey, I know that it doesn't usually mean that being on the first mission means that I'm good just because it passed, but that's more evidence for me being good than this person who was not on that mission, so you should put me on there, you know.
Yeah.
It's that kind of logical arguments.
Yeah.
You want people to be able to hedge their bets best, and sometimes those are inaccurate and you end up fucking each other over. So it's a lot of basically yelling back and forth and mind games. One time when I was playing, I actually forgot that I was evil, so I was sitting there, I'm trying to figure out who the evil people are, and I'm just like, oh right, I'm just acting way too well right now.
Method acting.
Yeah.
Insert Sir Patrick Stewart going, acting.
You thought I was asleep, didn't you? Acting.
So yeah, that's basically a lot of the political aspect of it, is you have to defend yourself, but also like you don't want to be too defensive, because you know, if you're really good, then having other good people on the team other than yourself is still beneficial. But there are sometimes like, usually, okay, you can play the game with any number of people, but every time I played it with these guys, we played with five, so I'm just going to talk about those games.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've got a three-person mission. So if you're good and you're not on that mission, you know for a fact that there is an evil person on that mission. So basically, you know, you can make those kind of arguments. I don't know. Do you have any clarifying questions? That's pretty much the best I got.
No, I think yeah. You're pretty clear-cut there.
And the reason it's called Avalon, because this version of the game is based on medieval, like, yeah. Kings of the Round Table. There's, like, a Merlin character and a Mordred and stuff like that.
And sometimes the bad guys would have lost the game, but then they just figure out and guess correctly who Merlin was.
Yeah, that's a thing. There are extra roles in the game. Like, there's one guy named Merlin who's good, but he knows who all the evil people are. And then there's an assassin. If the good people win and the assassin can correctly guess who Merlin is at the end of the game, then the evil people still win. So it basically adds an extra element of there's someone who has all the information and has to convey it to their teammates without showing that they know too much. So you basically have to, like...
sneaky.
Reverse engineer, like, logical arguments for why people shouldn't be, but maybe not do it too well, because then that still makes it too obvious.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. There's other roles too, but they're more complicated. So
just a lot of talking and persuading people.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So basically, it's like a game where the mechanics are exclusively the politics between the players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, that's cool.
That's my time.
Anywho, Taimul. What do you want to say about Monopoly?
Monopoly. It's the weird indie combination of Roly Poly Oly and the Mona Lisa.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck?
You wouldn't have heard of it.
Oh my god.
Anyways, first thing I want to say, I despise this game. It lasts way too long.
That's what she said.
I've never been able to finish one.
That's what she said.
It's very luck reliant.
That's what she said.
Whoa.
Making
judgments on a game you've never finished.
Kind of like life.
And it's a celebration of unrestricted capitalism.
Story of my life.
Anyways, Monopoly is a game where multiple players go around a board and on each spot is some piece of property or some sort of chance thing. And the goal of the game is to just buy all the property on the board. And when you land on another person's property, you have to pay that person money.
Called rent.
It's like real life, but if instead of, you know, picking where you went on vacation based on price and stuff, you just fucking rolled a 100-sided die and then decided where to go based off that, even if you only have $5 in your wallet and you decide that you're going to Vegas.
You've got a really irresponsible credit card company.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, so a lot of the game is about, like, trying to get as much property as you can and also, like, negotiating with other players on, like, buying things or trading things. And you're constantly, like, trying to get the edge up on others by, like, negotiating some sort of sale of property that would help you get more beneficial properties to you. Say you're trying to get 3 of the red properties, you might make a deal with someone else to give them a blue property they need.
And everyone has their own strategies, right?
Yeah, and everyone has their own strategies, and everyone's...
Who is it? It's Colin who insists that the purple properties are the best.
Yeah, everyone's competing with each other and trying not to give others too much while also trying to, like, make deals with them. So on one hand, you're giving to other people, but on the other hand, you're trying to keep as much to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's only actually so many different strategies in Monopoly.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just dependent on what you land on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the big issue. It's everything's kind of based around the roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Funny thing about Monopoly, when it was originally made, it was made to be like a criticism of, like, capitalism and just how, like,
how it destroys friendships.
More like how when people luck into something, they can just press that luck and, like, further their privilege in a way. But, like, eventually it was bought out and just commodified into what we know as Monopoly today, so.
Ironic.
And now it's making some Monopoly a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Hypocrisy.
Yep.
Hooray! Capitalism!
I think there's a bunch of different strategies, because you don't necessarily need to buy anything, but I think luck is still a factor, you're right.
Yeah, my strategy has always been just, whenever I land on something and it's not owned, buy the fuck out of it, you know?
Yeah, same. I'd say that's what most people do.
I mean, yeah, but I don't get you so far. I just get yellow. That's all I need. It's perfect.
Well, let's see how that strategy plays out for you, Keenan.
I mean,
okay.
You just never landed on a yellow.
Yeah.
I've actually won a game of Monopoly, several in fact, so why don't you, like, actually won?
I've won Monopoly. Fuck off. Why
no,
you
I mean, like, to the finish. Not, oh, well, let's call it quits and count up the money. No, I mean, like,
why
real.
Why are you
like,
assuming
I
that I haven't played
people.
A game of Monopoly to the finish? Like, I've won games of Monopoly to the very end. Fuck you. Mm. You're
sure.
Thinking like, oh, I'm so cool because I've played a game of Monopoly to the end. Fuck you, Keenan.
Shut up, nerd. I don't have to hear your sass.
My sass? You're the one who's just assuming I haven't played a full game of Monopoly.
It's a safe assumption.
Well, I don't have much else to say about Monopoly other than...
Okie dokie.
Let's move on to Keenan.
Keenan, what's this betrayal that you're talking about?
So,
is it something that you're particularly good at?
I mean, I will not confirm or deny any of those allegations.
Betraying people?
I refuse to give a comment. Anyway, Betrayal at House on the Hill is a really interesting game. Basically, it takes the cabin in the woods trope and kind of blows it all out of proportion. It's amazing. Basically, you play in a game that generates the board as you play. You get, like, tile cards, and you build the board. There's three levels to the house. There's the basement, the first floor, and the second floor. And at first, you're all friends exploring a haunted house together. Then you're all having fun, and there's no real danger. Like, you can get hurt, but you can't, you know.
There's lots of real danger. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, you can't die until the haunt happens.
Yeah, that doesn't mean there's not scary shit that happens.
So, like, you're all working together at first. Then when the haunt happens, which is basically you get a certain tile, and you have to, like, make a roll, and if you fail the roll, the haunt happens. And there's a way to decide the haunt, which is usually about cards that you have versus where you were when you made the roll.
Like in Clue, sorta.
Nothing like Clue.
I just mean in the, you know, certain item in certain room sense.
Yeah, sure.
Nothing's decided by that in Clue, but it's the same kind of thing.
Yes, but what eventually happens is that a traitor is revealed. And the traitor can either be the person who revealed the haunt.
It's usually Keenan.
And the haunt is basically the scenario. The scenarios are usually like the classic horror movie tropes, like you summon an elder god, one of you is a werewolf, Dracula, Frankenstein, a witch.
You become a giant blob monster and absorb everybody in the house.
Alien invasion.
Aliens have come and abducted you. You are an alien.
The house gets picked up by a giant bird.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
It's falling into hell.
So when that happens, a traitor's revealed and you have to play out the scenario. And everyone has their own rules. The good guys have their own rules as well as the bad guy. But sometimes what's really cool is that there is no traitor. So like one time, for example, a giant bird picked up the house and it was like flying away with it. And there were parachutes equal to the number of players divided in half.
Oh, really? I thought it was just minus one.
Yeah.
No, it's half rounded down.
It's half rounded down. Gotcha.
So like I was playing with five people once and there were only two parachutes. And whoever got the two parachutes, well, they had to get the parachute and then also actually get out.
Yeah, that haunt was fucking stupid when we did it.
Everyone just kept punching each other and getting the...
What's really cool about the game is, because at first you're all friends, and it's a very cooperative game, but you're still all keeping in mind that maybe, like, this person could become the traitor, so sometimes people hesitate to help.
Yeah.
Once the traitor happens, then it becomes very, you know, one against the other, but there's still, you don't want to give too much information away, because sometimes your goals are very straightforward, like, kill the bad guy. Other times it's like, get these four items and do a thing.
Yeah, it's like, it's advantageous to not let the traitor know what you're supposed to be doing.
There's still some information asymmetry you aim to have, and the same goes for the traitor. But what's really cool that I really like is when there's a secret traitor. There was one we played, I played it with you guys, I don't know if Shadow was there, but there was one where, like, an alien had infected people, and we had to, like, make a cure, and I was secretly the traitor, so, like, the whole time, I had to really play as though I wasn't the traitor, and it was great, because I was just like, don't worry, guys, I'll try to make that roll. Oh no, my stats are way too low. I can't make that roll, guys. It probably wouldn't be smart. Someone else should do that. And then someone was, like, infected and became an alien. And then I dramatically was like, I'll fight the alien guys, knowing that in real life there is no real harm. So it's really cool to see that, like, that classic deception going on in, like, board games, but also, like, really being unsure of who you're with in certain game modes.
Yeah.
The trust goes away so quickly in that game. Like, we're all friends exploring a haunted house, then someone finds, like, a cursed book, and then, you know, all bets are off.
I mean, it is called Betrayal.
Yeah, they betray you.
Yeah. I don't trust you guys for shit. I mean, when we're playing the game.
Thanks for the addendum to that.
Yeah, it's important.
Friendship.
Okay, so that sounds pretty cool. I guess we should probably move on.
Yeah.
Keenan, I kind of want to start with you.
Dope.
I know this is against the whole order we've been doing.
Fuck the order.
In Betrayal, I feel like there's very little in terms of politics generally. Like, I've never actually played one of the haunts where there's a secret traitor, but I feel like that is where the bulk of the politics that can happen in that game lie.
Yeah.
There's honestly, like, not a lot before the haunt that you really do to influence each other, aside from very, like, specific scenarios.
Well, I would argue that there is, because we know that... Odds are, because there's significantly more haunts, that there is a traitor that you know. So people, I found, play semi-defensively in the beginning. They really, like, try to get as many buffs. And they, like, it's weird. We buff ourselves up in case we have to fight the traitor. But we also buff ourselves up because if we're the traitor, we want to win.
Yeah.
You say that we play defensively, but, like, actually, what other option is there? Like, the only thing that you can do at the beginning of the game is explore the house and get items and stuff from that. Like, what other alternative is there? Just, like, stand around in one room and wait?
Like, most of the time, what ends up happening is there isn't actually much politics in it, simply because players who are on the same side will cooperate with each other.
Yeah.
Except we don't.
Except they will, because... one person is the traitor. They have a designated bad guy.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, to Keenan's point, if people were really trying to, you know, even everything out beforehand, then they would trade around the items and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like,
yeah.
You give the weaker players, like, weapons and stuff, because there's a character that has 6 might.
5.
Which is, like, your... what?
5.
Oh.
Cool.
Anyway, that's really high for starting might, which is used to attack physically. And there are some characters that start off with 2. And honestly, if we were being, like, really cooperative about it, if you found an item that lets you attack with more, or a suit of armor or something, you would give it to, like, the weaker characters, instead of hoarding it for yourself. Or, like, the parachute one. I played one time where, like, I actually was in an opportunity to have both parachutes, and I was just thinking about it.
That would be fucked up. Just jump out with both of them?
Yeah, no, I thought about it. But people, like, were like, we gotta team up to fight Keenan. Because he has control of the parachutes. And you may not be able to beat me, but you definitely can't beat Keenan. So they teamed up on me. I blew one of them up and, like, ran away. So that was fun. I didn't have to blow that
so
person up with dynamite.
You
yeah, they could have beat him. But, like, that's what I mean by, like, very...
yeah, when we
literal.
Fucking played that haunt, it was just, like, me, Chowder, and Riley standing in a circle for half an hour attacking each other and passing the parachute around in circles.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
it was stupid.
I played my friends in college with it, and... someone found it right away. I just kind of punched him in the face and took it. It's kind of rough.
Wow.
But the ones that are like...
like in the game or in real life?
Oh, like in the game. But the ones that are like hidden that have a potential of like infecting the other person, like the disease one I mentioned.
Yeah.
That one gets really sinister because you know that one person is the traitor, but if you walk near them, you get a chance of being infected secretly. And so then you start to not trust...
yeah, it's kind of similar to Avalon in that way.
It would be like Avalon. If Avalon had the potential for the set number of heroes and villains to change. Because, like, at Avalon, there's always going to be 2
yeah.
villains.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, you're right. Because, like, you don't know if someone else has been infected. So, like, for all you know in that haunt in Betrayal, you could be the last person alive.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be the last person that's a good guy. And I actually played a few times where, like, haunts like that happened. And there's times where, like, you honestly leave people to die because you know you can't save them. And also, like, if you did try to save them, you could end up buffing the bad guy.
Okay.
Right.
For example, like, evil twins were trying to kill us. And if the evil twin, which was controlled by the bad guy, which this was no traitor until you were killed by the evil twin, which was just controlled by, like, basic rules of heading towards you and trying to kill you.
They were NPCs.
So, like, I knew that this one person was going to get hit by it. And I could have saved them, but I chose instead to, like, save myself rather than save us.
You're an asshole.
Hey, man, I walked out of there fine. So, like, I didn't kill my evil twin, or did I?
Keenan's like, I might be an asshole, but at least I'm fucking alive.
Fair enough.
We were
playing, and I was just going to make a silly comment about how sometimes you just do away with all politics and just punch a god as Ox Bellows.
That can be political.
I mean, I'm pretty sure politics is... or war... well, it's... whatever, sorry. Sorry, Keenan, go.
I was playing as a character named Jenny, and my friends were like, wait, Keenan, are you the evil Jenny or the good Jenny? And I was like, I'm the real Jenny. I was the evil Jenny. It was just great. But yeah, that's kind of where I think the plot, it's not as strong as like where games are like purposely based on deception.
Yeah.
But I think that there's still a certain level of it in the beginning, and some scenarios are really heavy about it.
Yeah. Okay, so thinking about these four games, like, I've kind of lumped them into two categories, because it seems like in Betrayal and in Avalon, the politics that you engage in is, like, designed into the game's rules. Like, you are meant to work together in those games, whereas in, like, Monopoly and in Commander, it seems like...
Like, Avalon, you need to interact with others and cooperate with others. But in something like Monopoly or Commander, you could potentially just, like... Do your own thing and not interact with others.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were playing Magic or Monopoly with a bunch of people who were, like, really boring, you could make a house rule for those games where it's like, we will not talk about the game during someone else's turn or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all we can do is play cards, or all we can do is buy properties, or, like, ask if anyone wants to buy a thing for a price,
and
whatever.
The game would not be undoable.
I mean, I guess you could technically do that with Avalon, too. You would just be, everyone would be going through the mental process by themselves in their head.
I think that would just break the game. You would never, like, you would never get anywhere, because you wouldn't be able to persuade people.
It'd basically be a chance.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, though, Jeff, like, because you're representing Avalon, and I think out of Avalon and Betrayal, I think Avalon went into way further detail thinking about a player cooperation.
Yeah.
Or deception.
Cooperation or lack thereof.
Yes. So I was wondering if you thought that, like, I don't, maybe this is just a preference thing, but do you think that, like, a multiplayer game where there are winners and losers and shit is better for having design where it takes advantage of discussion and shit that might normally happen during a game and using that as one of its, like, core parts of its rule system?
Well, I don't...
Or do you think that it's more fun? Like, I don't know. What do you think about games?
I don't think it's better or worse. I don't know if I have a particular preference. I admit there's, like, a definite difference in those kind of things. But I think it's just like, oh, what are you really in the mood for right now? Because sometimes I'm in a mood to play a game where it's basically just going off of the rules and basically lock in which opportunities are afforded to you. And based on which opportunities are afforded to you, it clearly makes sense to do one thing or the other, you know? Sometimes I'm in a mood for that. And sometimes I'm in a mood for playing a game like Avalon or Coup, where it's less rules heavy and more based on deception and making people think things. And I think that Magic and Commander kind of falls in like a happy middle there. You are doing things based off of luck, but there is also an element of persuasion. Because I know that when we played Commander, we didn't do a whole lot, you know what I mean? Like, occasionally Austin would pipe up and say, hey, Jeff and Keenan are real fucking threats right now. But there was really no arguing with that, you know?
Yeah, like, we were all kind of new to this.
That's
so
true.
I wasn't a threat. I was a benevolent ruler. Okay. Democratically elected,
anyways,
who was overthrown by vicious, fire-breathing dragons.
Okay. Anyway.
But you're right. I'm the bad guy.
Anyways, like, we were all kind of new to that game and didn't know, like, the intricacies of that. I feel like if we played it more, we'd start to, like, actually, like, communicate with each other and just be like...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, like, at the time, we were all just kind of listening to Austin because he was the one who had played before. So we're like, yeah, I mean, if he says someone's dangerous, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
That's fair. Because you guys were new to the game, we didn't get to really do some of the deep thinking and talking and, like, sort of postulating that you might normally do in a Commander game. For example, a couple weekends ago, I was playing with some of my friends in Boston who I got to play Magic with throughout college. So it was just the three of us. I was playing the Hapatra deck that Taimul piloted, and one of them was playing a deck that was kind of a joke, that was just like a shit ton of demons. Like, everything was a demon.
Joke.
They were all just these big creatures. It was a black deck. And
so are you saying you had to, like, kill 1,001 demons?
Yeah, something like that, actually. Yeah.
Isn't it 10,000 demons? Was it?
Well, it's really 6 billion.
6 billion. Damn, there's the number.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Definitely,
but, you're all wrong.
Were you just trying to combine 101 Dalmatians with Kill 6 Billion Demons, Chowder?
No. Because
I want to see that fanfic.
I would love to see that fanfic, too.
I'm hungry, mother.
But honestly, I don't know. I don't know how I got that number.
Anyway, continue.
And then my other friend was playing this deck that was piloted by a creature called Tassiger the Golden Fang. Whatever, doesn't matter to you guys, but essentially, in the game, I set up this board state so that I could kill one player I had a moment, and we talked for a minute, and I decided to kill Giancarlo and his demons, because, you know, demons are fucking scary, and he had a lot of big things on the field, and I was like, I can get rid of them this turn, but I won't be able to deal with them later, and my other friend didn't really have anything on the field, but then the next turn, he, like, just stacked a bunch of absurd effects and got a bunch of value back from his graveyard, and he had a bunch of shit on the field, and he destroyed a bunch of my shit, and then I lost, just by virtue of, like, the fact that I didn't choose to kill him earlier. He had the ability to do it later. And that sort of shit can happen a lot in Magic, especially when, if we, like, had more decks to choose from with, like, better strategies and stuff.
Well, I think in games like Magic, the politics is less deception-based, like in Avalon or maybe Betrayal.
And more strategic.
It's more about, like, just gauging who's the biggest threat, yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's like, you assess the threat, and you also have to, like, kind of not hold grudges in these ways. Like, if someone's attacking you a lot, but then you realize that, like, you attack them back to the point where they're no longer the biggest threat, and then you have to shift your gears towards someone who is the bigger threat. So it's a lot of, like, making decisions based off of personal vendettas between that and making decisions based on who's the biggest threat.
Yeah.
That's the only way to play, personal vendettas.
I know.
And you also just have to think about investment. Like, if you invest a lot into killing one person, whether it's out of vendetta or out of threat management, and you take that person out, you might have, like, lost a lot of field to deal with the other players.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is, like, share the burden of taking someone out with someone else so that you could try to deal with the others.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was going to say, too, is, like, a lot of the strategy in these games is not making yourself the most powerful person, because then in a game with, like, four people, if you're the biggest threat, then it's suddenly a 3-on-1, and the 3-on-1 is definitely going to beat you most of the time, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like in those games, the strategy rarely works out towards just make yourself the most powerful to the point where a 3-on-1 doesn't beat you, you know? Like, that's a real unlikely scenario.
Mm.
It's less of a sprint and more of an endurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Sprint, you know, like, you don't want to use everything up on one person, but you don't want to just use none of it, making you the target.
Okay.
Guess if you're a wimp, sure.
I was going to ask Taimul. Actually, I am. I will ask Taimul very soon. just keep waiting.
Currently.
I'm in such suspense right
now. No, but Taimul, so because you hate Monopoly, and because you are, like, on the more, like, soft inclusion of politics in the game, representing Monopoly, if I split the game down between Avalon Betrayal and Monopoly / Magic the Gathering, where else would we get those groupings of games?
At a game store?
Anywho, I was wondering... yeah, actually.
I mean, I doubt they'd play Monopoly, but...
They still sell it.
It seems like the kind of deal-making that you make in both games is the same, and they are largely based on luck. And you can certainly take this question as an excuse to rag on Monopoly for, like, 8 minutes, but I would very much like it if you could do more comparison-contrast to show why you think Monopoly is super fucked up, and why it... I thought you were having fun with Magic the other day, and you said you really liked the Hapadra deck, so just, you know, why?
Why? Okay, what? The issue is that Monopoly can hit a state of equilibrium where everyone is in a position where if they give anything to someone else, that person has the big upper hand. There's this one game I was playing with two other people where, like, two of us were, like, almost matched in, like, wealth and property, and one was, like, trailing behind. Not far enough that they could just give up, but also not close enough that they'd be catching up quickly, you know? So we were in this stalemate where none of us wanted to sell anything, lest someone else be able to make houses and hotels, but none of us could do anything to, like, advance ourselves. We didn't have the ability to make more houses and hotels, and, like, it was so evenly split that the random luck of the draw just kind of kept everything the same, so we just,
So no one had a fucking Monopoly, is what you're telling me?
Yeah, exactly.
At least in Magic, everyone does Magic.
Yeah, with Magic, it doesn't drag on like that. Especially with Commander, it starts off slow, but then ends very quickly, you know? It's always dynamic. Everything's always changing.
Okay.
Players are playing something new, and thus changing the state of the game. Like, there was a time where Jeffrey was the biggest threat because of his dragons, but then I was in a position to send in a fucking swarm of snakes on everybody. And that's when I became the biggest threat. And, like, there were times where Keenan had, like, an army of buffed up dudes. And it's like, oh, shit. Should we?
I had an army of defending my border. God forbid, you fucking imperialists.
I just didn't give a shit about what any of you were doing because all of my creatures attacked you directly instead of attacking, you know, like you couldn't block any of them because they could all fly.
Well, okay.
Jeff,
I wasn't paying a single bit of attention.
But yeah, if I had to crunch it down, I think that's the big difference. Monopoly, you're kind of doing the same thing for hours on end, while Magic, the game's constantly changing and like how you win and what your strategy is has to change, and you gotta improvise, and that's nice.
Yeah, it's like, you can't really, like, there's not much that you can get in Monopoly that's, like, a fucking game changer, aside from, like, a few specific properties, but that's, like, the only ones, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the cards that you draw, they just, like, oh, hey, you get $100, or hey, you lose $100, like, they're not game changers, they just affect it a little bit.
Yeah, like, even going to jail doesn't really do much, because you're still making money.
I really like the stage later in the game where going to jail is a good thing, because all the properties are bought, and you just want to not, you know, not land on anyone else's property.
Step on anything.
That's such a dumb rule. Yeah.
It's kind of like real life, where if you have enough money, it doesn't matter if
you're in prison.
Horrible crimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think that's a dumb rule in the game. Like, if you're in prison, I shouldn't have to pay you rent. You're in prison, fuck off. That's why you have to avoid it. Prison is a bad thing, no matter how much money you have, because it's still a bad thing to do.
Because simulated prison in a board game doesn't fucking matter, because you don't actually have to be in a dangerous environment and, you know, be super bored with no activity.
Excuse me, have you ever played that? Have you ever played a game of Monopoly with friends? That is a dangerous environment, Jeffrey.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you're right. It is a danger. You're right. Monopoly is basically just prison. You're in a dangerous environment where you're sitting around really bored with nothing to do.
Exactly.
And then someone takes all your money.
Yeah.
Now if only could someone could summon like flood the board with snakes. Now that would improve Monopoly a lot.
But that doesn't happen in prison.
Fuck tons of snakes. Like snakes up the butt. Snakes everywhere, snakes out of every orifice.
That's disgusting. I'll
snakes.
Say it.
Why did you say those words? No.
Yeah, why?
Okay, dudes, this is the rating section. We're gonna grade this shit. You're grading Magic. You're grading Magic the Gathering.
Hellkites.
Yes. Out of
Death Snakes.
A maximum score of 5 out of 5.
Land.
Oh god, there's so many good things. No. Lands are like that's the basics.
Hellkite Charges.
Yeah, because Jeffrey did win the game. I think that Jeffrey's right. yeah. You have to grade it from 1 to 5 Hellkites. In Magic the Gathering, for anyone who doesn't know,
I used this a quote-unquote strategy in which I didn't have to use any politics because I had a creature called a fucking territorial Hellkite that just attacked a random person every turn, and I didn't get to choose who it attacked, so I didn't even have to participate in any of the politics.
That's a thing, though. Like, you can do damage to people, and then you have, like, the political advantage of saying, I don't get to choose.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
You can't blame me. So anyway, it's a big scary dragons. You gotta grade it on 1 to 5 Hellkites. So let's start out with Jeffrey, as tradition would dictate.
I think I'm gonna give Magic a 3 out of 5 Hellkites, just because like it is a fun game, and I agree that the rules are actually pretty simple to grasp. You know, I've tried to jump into a lot of other card games and just kind of gone along with it because I didn't really understand what was going on. And oddly enough, still end up winning somehow. It happens all the time where I play these board games, I'm like barely paying attention to the rules, and there's people who are talking strategies, I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then we get to the end of the game, and it's just like, tally up the points. Oh, looks like Jeff won, and I'm just like, what?
Jeffrey, he likes to button mash his way to victory.
Pretty
son.
Much, except in paper form. So I do think that they, like, the game is pretty accessible in terms of the rules. My problems with the game, other than that, is its inaccessibility in terms of, like, how much you have to actually spend to get a reasonable deck. Like, if you're just playing casually with the beginner decks, like, it's not as fun as if you're playing with like the decks that you built. Like I had a much better
time. With all the flashy shit.
I had a much better time playing with all of the decks that Austin had curated out of like the cards that he had gotten over a long time than I did playing with the beginner decks, which we did earlier today, right?
Yeah.
The game by itself, you have to spend a lot of money to get there, which I think is a huge downside to it in terms of like bringing in new people. You know, it's got some upsides and some downsides, so I'm going to say three out of five Hellkites.
Cool, I'll take it. Next is Taimul, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, listeners.
Yeah, I prefer Chowder.
You're not a listener.
I could listen to this.
Well, me, I would give it a 3.5 Hellkites out of 5.
Oh my god.
Nice.
So, that poor Hellkite. Maybe. He's not even going to be able to fly. You're just leaving him on the fucking ground, like, bleeding out. These are my babies, Chowder.
Fuck that Hellkite, man.
Where are my dragons?
Chill. Chill, mother dragons.
Bend the fucking knee, motherfuckers.
Reasoning. Taimul.
Yeah, no, from what I got to play of Magic, it's got very accessible rules. It's flexible enough that you can
literally bend the cards if you want.
And create a variety of decks and, like, not have to rely on archetypes and shit like certain other cop Yu-Gi-Oh!
Card Better games. Watch yourself.
Anyways, yeah, and if I were a richer man, I think I'd really enjoy Magic. But I'm not a rich man, so, you know, but the thing that gives it that extra half are the illustrations. The illustrations are super pretty and nice and incredibly well
drawn.
Yeah,
I literally thought one was a photograph earlier.
They got a lot of stylistic flourish, and it's all really good. And I like drawing, and I like appreciating drawings and illustrations, so yeah,
chill.
3.5.
Keenan, shoot.
I would give Magic 3 Hellkites. I like the accessibility. I also like the Commander game mode, which let all four of us play, which is something that, like, I personally don't see a lot in card games, because usually it's, like, 1v1. So it's kind of cool to have, like, 1v1, v1, v1. I don't know, I kind of like that dynamic of having more than one person and kind of have to, you know, like, think about attacking who and what and why you care about people. The reason why I'm not giving it, like, 5 stars is just because the expense of it. And also just because, like, frankly, I'm not incredibly into card games anymore. That's just me personally. I also didn't like that necessarily that the way I played originally in Commander, I wasn't able to play a mode that I like. I'm usually very aggressive, and, like, the deck I had, which was, like, the Claw Progress, was pretty aggressive, but not as aggressive as, like, the starter deck that was given to me with, like, vampires and demons and stuff.
Yeah, so that's fine. I like middling results. Like, consistency is good. As long as nobody really hated it, I'm okay with nobody really loving it. I, like, it was fun.
It's also, like, it's also one of those games where it's, like, once you get more into it and you understand, like, where you just know what all the cards do, it's a lot more fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you can just do stuff faster. Yeah, whatever. But anywho, I think today, I was trying to think of, like, some super crazy spell or creature or something to give the winner. But, like, I don't know, I think something that everyone took advantage of in the game that we played was gold tokens. Jeffrey cursed me with a spell that made it so that whenever somebody attacked me, they could get a gold token, which they could use to help cast their spells and stuff. So the winner is going to be awarded the golden gold token.
The golden gold token.
Yeah.
The golden redundancy.
Oh, man. The redundant gold star of redundancy.
Yeah. You know? So
brought to you by the
kill me.
Follow up joke. Damn it. Fuck.
It's okay, Taimul, even though that was horrible, because I was going to give you the golden gold token for the episode.
Hey. Oh my god.
First of all, number one. Taimul comes right out of the gate repping something that he hates. Okay? And you're like, "Okay, is he going to do this right?" And he did it.
Oh my god!
Wait, so, like, you gave, actually, I think, like, a pretty even-handed analysis of Monopoly's gameplay, at least, like, in the first half before I told you to rag on it. Like, you talked about how politics enters into that pretty well. when Keenan was talking about betrayal, you offered your insights pretty nicely while also letting him get his point across. And none of us know that much about Avalon aside from Jeff, so I didn't like think that everyone had to contribute to that. But I think that you also had some good like insights about the gameplay in Magic that like I wasn't going to mention and stuff. But you still you done good, kid. So here's your golden gold token. Have a mana.
Yay. It's twice the gold that everyone else has gotten, Chowder. It makes up for the fact that this is your first one.
Oh shit!
On episode 39 of the podcast.
I feel like the Leonardo DiCaprio of this podcast, all right? I had to fucking crawl inside that bear,
man.
Are you saying
that you should have won every time, but you just didn't till now? Because I think that's... Chowder, I don't know about you comparing yourself to Leonardo to fucking DiCaprio.
I mean, I'm just as handsome as him.
And the listeners can take your word for that, because this is an audio podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got pictures of everything.
All I'm saying is I don't give a shit if Chowder won the podcast, because I won the game of Magic, so I think I'm the real winner here. That's what I'm going to take away from this.
The real Planeswalker.
I got my win through skills and Hellkites. Chowder just got it by being intelligent.
Okay. Well, that about wraps it up. Again, I'm your host, Austin, and this week's topic was Magic the Gathering and politics in multiplayer games. You can check it out at...
go to a game store.
You could just, like, say, what's Magic the Gathering, and then a bunch of nerds will descend upon you.
I'm pretty sure, like, most Walmarts have, like, a section for card games.
Or you can do like we did find an event at a local game store and get starter decks given to you for free.
Or if you can't do any of those moving things, you can go online to magic.wizards.com. And, they've got lots of useful things. So, which one of us is hosting the next episode?
Oh, that would be me.
Okay, Jeffrey, what's it about? We hate it?
Next episode of the podcast, we're doing something a little bit special. We're trying to kind of adopt this sort of more chill format for the last episode of our 8-episode cycles. And for that, I'm going to make it super not chill, and we're all going to be repping things that we personally dislike, media that we dislike, and we're just going to bitch about media that we don't like. Generally, they're going to be...
I did it before. It was cool.
Yeah, exactly. Generally, they're going to be they're going to be things that most people would enjoy, but we in particular don't like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not just bad media.
Yeah, no, because I was thinking that, like, you should have had me on the episode so I could rep Ann Coulter's blog.
We're repping things, basically, that most people would enjoy, but we personally don't like. That's the gist.
Okay. Anyway, be sure to read up before it airs next week on October 13th. Friday the 13th?
Yeah, Friday the 13th, Jeffrey's birthday.
Oh, shit.
Two very dangerous events.
Yeah, that's great.
Fun time.
If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It's a great way for more people to find our show, as is recommending us to friends. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Austin Liebers, joined by Jeff Levitt, Taimul Chaudhary, and Keenan Kodish. This episode is sponsored by having two of the editors accidentally edit the same section and only realizing this days prior to the episode's airing. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by Jeff Levitt,
that's me,
Austin Liebers,
and Laura Kramer,
and featuring original music by Colin Ketchin. If you like this show, follow us, tell your friends, or leave us a review. We hope you tune in for our next episode on October 13th.
That's my birthday. You can listen as a birthday present to me. I'd really appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to this.
I guess we should probably decide at some point who's editing which sections.
We should clap sometime. You want to clap at 13 minutes?
Okay.
All right. 5 seconds.
Oh, wait, what? What? Oh, shit, no. Fuck.
Okay, we're gonna...
Okay, you literally just sat there for 10 seconds and didn't fucking... Okay, whatever, Chad.
Sorry.
We're gonna clap at 20 seconds. Can I get a roger that?
Roger
that. Roger, 5 seconds.
Okay. That's good.
Chowder, you're a fucking disappointment.
I know.
Okay.
I live with it every day.